Blog Talk Radio.
You brought too many.
We'll be right back. of the afternoon, May 31st, show 255. Welcome to another Sun is Shining, getting close to summer, and I could use a sandwich edition of Soul
Radio
and the Raw. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram, DJ Honeycomb, and as always, it is good to have you in the house. Soul Radio, sponsored by the Black Athlete Sports Network, Roland Rogers, CEO in loving memory, our friends at Blog Talk, our friends and colleagues at WCLM 1450 AM, the soul of Richmond, Virginia, where Cowboy Reggie and crew do their thing, doing sports talk every Saturday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. in the aft, as well as our brother Pat Freeman, the mighty Oba. May his tribe increase. Putting the foot in the ass of the powers that be in Western New York to guarantee that fair-minded folks come together and the people speak and a new edifice, a sports entertainment complex will arise with private funding that will allow the possibility of anywhere from 8 to 15,000 permanent jobs to get in there and take care of folks in the Western New York area. Mr. Freeman has been tireless in his efforts on this. We've had him on the show several times, and Brother Man also hosts the world's number one sports show, or the number one sports show in the nation, at 4 p.m. on WUFO 1080 AM, The Mix. That's www.wufoam. And as always, we salute Brother Oba, as well as our colleague Travis Singleton and his organization, Kicks for Grades. If you're good in school, you'll do even better on your feet. You know, the school year is winding down, but it's not too late to get them A's in here in time. And if you're a lucky person after the draw, you got a new pair of kicks on your feet. That's boys and girls. So Travis, as always, we salute our young chef. And as well as our colleagues at Guardian Caps, Leonard Hanson and Mike Feely, Brother Anthony Johnson, who does a fantastic job with his show, The Anthony Johnson Show, 9 to 11 every Thursday evening on Blog Talk Radio. Anthony is always on point with his stuff. And we have to shout out our friend and colleague, Craig Stroman. Craig and his organization, We Feed the Homeless Philly, will be having their annual fundraiser on the 22nd of June, Sunday, about 3 weeks. And he is out there every Saturday feeding the homeless. You know, we know cities have been putting together all kinds of technicalities to try to eliminate this sort of thing, but brother's undaunted. He has no agenda other than he wants people need to get fed. And we love this brother. We respect him and all the work that he does. His fundraiser, again, is on the 22nd of June, and we will have him on beforehand to do some more touting for it. As always, riding shotgun with me, the bad man from the East Bay, Mr. Biggs himself, Gary Norris Gray. What up, G?
I'm taking a break to run to D.C., brother.
Oh, shit. What's going on?
We're going to have a powwow in Washington, D.C.
Well, there needs to be powwow, but we know the line of ignorance comes all the way around, not just Washington, D.C., but in the offices of that football team with that nickname that we all know we don't want to say. But since you brought this up, let's start on this because we know they've been trying to spin this nonsense about what the nickname of the team actually means, you know, that a racist like George Preston Marshall would say, we're going to develop this team and give them this nickname to represent the fighting spirit of these guys. Yeah, the guys that y'all wiped the fuck out almost completely on the map here in this part of dirt that we call America. Having said that, the latest nonsense comes from the Twitter campaign that the Washington Football Club started to defend their name. And this starts off, and I'm only going to use this for purposes of saying the name because we have to put this right out where it is to show you the extent of where they're trying to go with this. Now, by the fact that most Native Americans, members of Congress, a majority of the United States Senate, you know, religious leaders, civil rights groups, several current and former NFL players, United Nations human rights representatives, our own Gary Norris Gray, leading the charge here from Black Athlete as well as our people, because we do not use the name when we write our articles here on this site. And even the president has said, change the damn name. It is a dictionary-defined racial slur, like kike, like nigger, like chink, wop. Pick one. You can't use the name, or you at least shouldn't use the name. And, of course, the front office, undaunted, said, fuck you, because we going to do this our way. Exactly. So there you see the arrogance of all of this. And this is the thing that we talked about and touched on a couple of shows ago, because even when they're so strong-armed, Gary, that they're going to change the name, that they'll have no choice but to change the name, they'll still get over, because the dumb fuck that Fred talks about as fans, they'll be buying the new jersey name stuff, whatever the paraphernalia is, whether it's T-shirts or hats or whatever. They'll be buying it. You know, they're giving this same guy who really doesn't deserve this kind of cash the money. And anyway, let me carry on with this
okay.
to the point. All right. Yes, sir.
There's a thing that I was stressed to America today.
Mm-hmm.
American Indians have the highest unemployment rate in this country. The highest.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Native American Indians have the highest suicide rate in this country.
Mm-hmm.
They have the highest teenage pregnancy rate in this country.
Yep.
They also have the highest murder on them by other cultures to them.
Mm-hmm.
Highest rate, okay?
Yep.
Now, do you see it anywhere in the news?
No, and you're not going to.
ABC, CBS, anybody say about this? No. The reason why, there's no political power. There's no economic power.
That's right.
That's why.
That's right. That's
now,
right. You better believe.
That is better.
You better believe if they were to call this team the Washington Faggots, gays would be on them like stank on doo-doo, and rightfully so. So let's not even go there. The bottom line is, though, gays have been able to marshal their influence and power to a point where they know you better respect what we do, because if you don't, we will definitely take our finances out. We will mobilize. We will do all the things that need to be done to make sure that you do respect us. And I don't have a problem with that at all. That's exactly how shit should be done. But
my next point as African Americans in this country, we have to support our brothers. Now, example of this is Emerson Whitney. Emerson Whitney had a new record called Peace Fighting.
Right.
Emerson Whitney was on the cover of the album Headdress and Warpaint, which is most sacred, and he never did.
I know. Stupid. Yeah.
Well,
as soon as he put on the war paint, he fucked up.
Hey, well, Emerson Whitney got education. He got education. This is what we got to do. We had to educate our brothers and sisters how this minority is society in America. I salute the brother, because what he did was, he gave money to the New York Indian AIM. He took off the Indian war paint on his website. Now, if more people would do this and advertise it and tell why, the would stop.
But see, it's not enough. It's not enough, Gary. He shouldn't have put it on in the first place. And the fact that he's doing this is only backlash that was so significant that his handlers made him take it off, because they realized it wasn't going to go the way they were going. And in that spirit, let me say these things regarding the tweets that Washington's football team put out and some of the responses. And I'm doing this because we know the mouse ain't going to do this. So
no.
I want to read, and I'm going to read some of these verbatim so that you'll understand. This one is from the offices of the Washington football team. Now, the first tweet is, tweet at Senator Reid, referring to Harry Reid, the Democratic chairman, to show your Redskins pride and tell him what the team means to you. Now, another idiot from the communications department said, I'm sure this will end well, RT. Redskins, tweet Senator Reid to show your Redskins pride and tell him what the team means to you. Now, it started to go downhill almost immediately. This seems like a bad idea, implies one person, and it kept going. a young man, Jameel Smith, says, racial slur pride, a hashtag racial slur pride, as opposed to, you know, show your pride and tell him what the team means to you.
Yeah.
Another
yeah.
one, Daniel Silver, said, glad you asked. It's flat-out racist, RT. Tweet Senator Reid, et cetera, et cetera. Another one, Jonathan Bernhardt. First thing that comes to mind is that rich sports teams owners get no shame, got no shame, if they think their wallet's in danger. That's an interesting one. Another one, Jeb Lund, on a mobile phone, text a picture of Native Americans being thrown in the charnel pit, ready to get blown up because they were massacred by American soldiers. Erica Martyr, a symbol of overt racism, not proud. And then another one, a picture of a photo mem of a white boy in war paint, drunk with a drink in his hand, and a Donovan McNabb jersey saying, I don't normally have culture, but when I do, it's yours. And signed Jacqueline Keeler. So she picked that mem out specifically for that. Richmond Opus, I'll be way more proud of my team if they do the right thing and change the name. So clearly from this, the PR campaign is not going well. A young lady named Danny sent an article about the Minnesota Indian murders, and underneath, Dakota 38 were called Redskins before the largest mass hanging in U.S. history. Good for her. No hashtag Redskins pride here. And another one, obstinate ignorance and racism. Like the team, hate the racist name. You're in a hole. Stop digging. These are some of the responses that came from this. And the one, the last one I want to read before we carry on is, did you really just ask your fans to tell Senator Reid why you should support racial slurs in the NFL? It's a point of shame, not pride. So, Gary, throwing all that back in the pot, clearly this was a PR idea gone horribly bad. But if somebody in a PR department actually thought that this was going to work, that tells you where the problem begins.
Well, it's arrogant. It's complete. Look, we all know it's complete arrogance. Arrogancy are the wise people to do what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Arrogant. I wrote that. I have a radio every single year. Every year I write these guys. So please, can you change the name? They write it back. They write it back and say, well, you know, excuse me. Your name was the Boston Braves. That was your name.
Mm-hmm.
Boston Braves. That was your original name. So don't tell me that.
That's right.
Your name. See, if people, mm-hmm. if people read the injury, they would know where it came from. That's the problem with this thing.
They could have been the Washington Braves. They could have been the Washington Warriors. They could have been anything. And no one would have said boo. No one has a problem with the picture depicted in their logo. Nobody has a problem with
the colors,
how the Native man looks,
nothing.
Or the colors, or any of that stuff. They chose to do this. And with a Jewish man and Daniel Snyder owning the team, knowing some of the shit his own people went through, you would think the last thing this man would do would be to give his football team a pejorative like that instead of changing the name. Now, we already know names can be changed, so, you know, don't give me the horse shit about tradition. I could make the same traditional argument about the Baltimore Bullets, who became the Washington Bullets. You know, the Bullet didn't imply anything other than they were a fast team. But all of a sudden, because Washington was like Gun City and people were getting popped, somehow that seemed to translate that being a member of the Washington Bullets was a bad thing and that the nickname should be changed, and all of a sudden all the gun problems and all the shootings were going to stop because the basketball team changed its name from the Bullets to the Wizards. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Well,
it's more pathetic than funny, but I mean, that's messed up, G.
The logic in America really bothers me. I don't get it. I mean, it's Dan Snyder, no matter to begin with. That's the first thing. Number two, okay, if you had a name, why would you help Native Americans? My suggestion to Dan Snyder is, why would you give money to all the reservations in this country?
But you know, he's not going to do that. But you know, Dan, hold up. No, I'm talking about realistic situations now. He's not, in his arrogance, going to do that. And that's why I made the point about the front office doing this PR campaign. Because if he did this, if his front office thought that this was a good way to throw some spin against the rising tide of having everybody tell him to change the damn name, they wouldn't have come up with this shit. Clearly, it's not even about them being clueless as much as, like, we're going to do whatever the hell we want with this. And ultimately, it doesn't change the fact that we're not going to change the name. Somebody's going to have to come out with something out of the woodwork that's going to cause them to capitulate. And I don't see Snyder having a come-to-Jesus moment and saying, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to do right and I'm going to donate all this money to, you know, the reservations everywhere. No, you wouldn't help out a people when you work so hard to destroy them. And trust me, in many aspects, this is no different than the charnel pit where those Native American brothers and sisters were massacred in Minnesota. It's the same, man. It's a different kind of death, but you better believe. The longer that they do not hear or don't want to hear or won't pay any attention to any of the rising concerns to say, y'all need to change the name. It's just proof that the arrogance of Snyder and others like him will not deviate one iota. They're not going to give anything. They're going to be forced in a corner, and then when they do, G, they're going to say, okay, we'll change the name and we'll make all this new money from the memorabilia and stuff that will be sold with that name. You know,
what makes me angry about this thing is you have African Americans who wear this stuff and you have a guy, he died about 3 years ago. You had a guy that would go to the games in full regalia who was African American.
Yeah, I know that was that. Yes, that was the guy who made the.
I have a cousin in New Jersey who wears this stuff right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to educate African Americans. Look, you know what's wrong with this thing. Why are you supporting this? So it's slowly sneaking into my cousin, but it's gonna take three years to do that. So what's it gonna do for America?
It's interesting that you just mentioned the groups of people involved in the three largest holocausts in history between Native Americans, blacks, and what Jews have always professed and always put out, you know, about their ethnic group. So all of this stuff that's going on, brothers are slowly picking up on it. Historically, we've always been linked one way or another. But when all this spits out, the bottom line is what you just saw there. And that's why I made a point of reading some of these things verbatim, because they're not going to do this. They're showing you in their ignorance how hard they're going to dig their heels in and say, we're simply not just going to say the things that you all want to hear. And we're definitely not going to do the things that you want to hear. You know, this is saltine times 10. This is not regular cracker, and it's not even saltine. This is beyond saltine because they don't give a fuck.
Well,
when somebody like Daniel Snyder creates a campaign like this, this is straight I don't give a fuck.
Since we've
gotten to this point, I want to switch to the recent situation revolving the sale of the Los Angeles Clippers because...
Oh, Lord. Yes.
If you remember...
Yes.
Do you remember the movie The Sting?
Yes.
Okay, you know, Scott Jobin. Well... That's exactly what the fuck happened. We were made privy to the Sting 3. Okay, there was a Sting 2. And before I go into the aspects of Sting 2, we got Cowboy Reggie coming in live from WCLM, 1450 in Richmond. Yippee-ki-yay,
gentlemen,
Cowboy.
Gentlemen.
All right, Cowboy.
How's it going today, gentlemen?
We're hitting it all right. But just one thing before we move on to... Richmond and the sale of the Clippers. We've been talking in the beginning of the show, as G led off here, about the latest media campaign to have your fans down there in your neck of the woods show their Washington football team pride. And, of course, it backfired on them. So I wanted to get the vibe on what sports radio were talking about this. And then obviously I'm referring to the campaign that the Washington football team's PR department started because they were trying to stick it to Harry Reid and say, we want all Redskins fans to show their pride, hashtag blah, 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 on Instagram and Twitter. And, of course, they sent a bunch of things saying, change the name, it's racist. There, it clearly wasn't anybody who was going to show their so-called you-know-what pride. So, just tell me if they've talked about that down there on the sports stations and has anything locally news-wise come up from it, because obviously they're not saying anything about it on national mainstream sports news.
Well, I can tell you that this past Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and a little bit yesterday, talk radio in D.C. has blown off the roof. And I tell you, the young man, I think it's Mr. White, that's the PR person with the Washington football team. And I think he's graduate from an HBCU. But I'm saying this brotherhood is on the chopping block because basically anybody knows, Mike, you know this yourself. Anytime there's a PR problem, you get in front of them. That's PR 101. And you try
that's
to
true.
Control the actions. You don't let the environment control. You try to control it. Well, anytime you go on Twitter, it's open season.
Mm-hmm.
And see, they really dropped the ball on this, and it's been a PR nightmare. See, before Mr. Snyder, I'm going to give respect, Mr. Snyder said, put in caps in the Washington Post and the New York Times that I am not changing names, put in bold caps. That should have been the end
of it. That's right, he did that.
It go. But yeah, it's like poking the bear. You keep this thing going over again, you keep poking the bear. And right now, it has been such a negative connotation as far as PR nightmare all one. I'm looking for heads to roll with the Washington football team as far as the PR department, because this has been a nightmare that Mr. Snyder did not look for, did not want. And the sad part about this, that you have Negroes down here that will fight you tooth and nail.
That's what Gary just said.
Matter of fact, Roy Jefferson, former Washington football player.
I remember
player,
him, 87. I remember him.
Yes, sir. I asked him point blank because he was here at Metropolitan Metro Little League back in the day, and I said, Mr. Jefferson, because, you know, I respect that's Mr. Jefferson. What's your thoughts about the name of the Washington football team? He said he didn't think it was racist. And Mr. Jefferson is an Indian. He has an Indian descent. Now, he's entitled to his opinion. And, again, he wore that helmet proudly because, he, you know, Mike, when you strap it up, you're on that field on a level with
that's
you
right.
know, who am I to condemn him? You know, but still, I just said, so well, we disagree and disagree. I said, but I still have much respect for you for what you did, you know. But, again, it's just like the Clippers, and I give love to those young men from Graham. I'm not trying to be all over the place, but Graham, the football team, had nothing to lose. I mean, nothing to win. Nothing to win at all.
That's right.
That didn't
there was no money in their pocket from it.
No money at all. They stood up when the Clipper players just took off their little jerseys and pouted like little children and said, we're mad. We're going to pout, but yet we're still going to play the game. What did that accomplish? It didn't accomplish nothing.
Well, hold on, Gary.
And I said, see, my thing is, like I told people before, what the Europeans and the Greeks, you got to give them credit. They say, we can get these Negroes money, not the kind of long money that my man got $20 billion that can say, well, and it was a blind bid. Yeah, right, whatever. It was not a blind bid. Everybody knew what the picture was in. I mean, come on. But my thing is, if I can get an athlete $3 or $4 million to shut him up or give him comfort, that'll be a threat. That's why you don't see LeBron James really going out like a Jim Brown, like a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, because now they know as long as we can pay him, put agents, European agents right there and control them like circus animals, then we don't have nothing to worry about.
Well, we can keep LeBron out the equation because, remember, LeBron has suffered backlash because he doesn't have a white agent. They're mad that they didn't get his money to the extent that they thought
especially
they were going to get it. So, you know, so I would say LeBron, and remember, LeBron came in the league as a teenager, so I'm not going to shut him down yet because I think he's trying to come of age with this from a maturity standpoint and see that, you know, you can't get away from the activism, especially when you know what's at stake. And I have a feeling he may be a bit more aware than others. But having said that, I'm more surprised, and then Gary, you next, at how they've kept a lid on that in the D.C. area only, because it really hasn't expanded to anywhere else. You know, if we're not on these, if we're not touring cyberspace, it hasn't been said anywhere else.
I got this with you, Mike, because yesterday on the show, they even named it different. Like, it's Deadspin and other places. It's 20 different people who picked up on this and ran with it out of D.C. and counting.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's such an embarrassment. They even went down the list of different blogs and also different newspapers that have really, because really, Mr. Snyder has pissed so many people off. They ain't trying to get a chance to stick it to them. They do. So I kind of disagree with you that one, Mike. It's been about, matter of fact, on 106 The Fan, and Gary, you back me up. You heard him, Kai. Let's radio show. You heard him.
Well, I don't
really
doubt
going
that.
Off about
no, but I think you misunderstood my question, bro. I said
I don't doubt
it has been down there in the D.C. area. I'm sure it's been out there. And like I said, cyberspace has picked up on all of that. But the mainstream has not caught on with it, where you're going to hear anybody on ABC News or NBC Nightly News to say there's a problem in D.C.
I'm going to tell you why. The reason is, number one, it can't get the money. That's why you don't hear it, because it's not going to
That's right.
Man, it's controversy. Like, the Rod James is controversy. Everybody gets the money. Why is the football club only in the D.C. area is controversial?
Yeah.
Why? Because African Americans don't care. White Americans are ignorant. They're very deadly combination. African Americans had to become more aware of.
Amen, brother. You preach to the choir. Amen.
About the issue.
Amen.
I've been saying this for years and years and years. My cousin, who was 45 years old, and had been watching the football club fan for 30 years, it's a difficult to get to their heads why this is important.
But see, Gary, what you're talking about, it goes way beyond any football team or images of ethnic groups, because we just had primary elections. And black people, at least in the Philly area here, they did not turn out. Now, you're talking about a city that's rife with corruption. You're talking about a city that feeds on patronage and is just parasitic when it comes to those at the top getting theirs. And while jails are being built, fucking jails are being built with money that they've set aside in the budget for, schools are getting closed. You know, there are fewer and fewer options out there for young people and older and older folks. And those who are trying to find jobs ain't getting jobs because there's none out there to find. And you're talking in this atmosphere that the one thing you're worried about more than anything else is who the fuck sung better on American Idol? Are you fucking kidding me?
Yep.
It goes.
That's
yep.
your profanity.
Yep. Culture conditioning.
Exactly. So they've done a good job of that, and the ancestors would kick my ass if I did not speak up on this, because that's where we're at right now. We know, especially after we saw Sister Maya Angelou join the ancestors, and they're already trying to disrespect her by telling her or by saying so many words that, well, she wasn't all that great a writer, some asshole. Who brought that up? And, yes, indeed.
Are you serious?
Some some asswipe named Derby Shar came up with this nonsense. And I'm not even going to give him any more weight than that. The whole point is that no matter what you are, if you happen to be black, you're not even allowed to die in peace, because in this so-called news cycle, somebody's going to come out and say some shit about you to try to defame
you. He should be challenged, too.
He was challenged and then some. But the point is, and this is where it goes back to where we started here, he had a forum in which he could say this. You know, I mean, we got a whole bunch of assholes out here who would do stuff, but that he would have a forum where he could speak on this shit and go unchallenged is the bigger issue. You ask the question, what forum would allow this? You know pretty much what the answer is. But the bottom line is, it wasn't enough that you just say, Maya Angelou, poetess, laureate of the United States, and great thinker, beautiful human being, moved on to the ancestors at age 80, whatever. You know, that wasn't enough. Some asswipe had to come out and say, well, she wasn't all that great, so fuck her. You know, and then when they say these things, and I say these things because that's the real profanity, how she's been treated. Stop worrying about whether I'm going to say some 11-letter pejorative, because the real profanity lies in the climate that would allow someone to disrespect a great person like Maya Angelou and say what they say. Opinion is one thing, but to come out and desecrate it by dumping on her, by throwing all this other stuff in there that has nothing to do with her poetry, that has nothing to do with what she's done as a human being, that's the problem. And as I say this, the professor,
Amen.
Fred Whitted, is in the mix.
Michael, Michael.
Go ahead, guys.
It's like when Ali spoke against the Vietnam War. What happened to Ali? They couldn't stand it. They hated it.
They threw his black ass in jail is what happened to him. Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Okay, now, Ali can't speak. He can't speak publicly now because of his condition. Now he's the most loved person in the world.
We touched on this. He's beloved now because he's not perceived as a threat. He doesn't look as masculine when he's shaking and stuff like that from Parkinson's. And they love that shit. So all of a sudden now, he's beloved. He's the greatest. He always was the greatest to us. But now it's used against him because this is the image they want to perceive him. See, when you're black and male in this society, you know, we can reduce you to a shaking piece of whatever. Because all we care about is that we continue to program and continue to put that PTSD on your ass. So even if you've never been in a war, even if you've never seen the bombs bursting in air, you better believe you're under siege as we speak right now. And if you don't understand that, see what we've done to the strongest of you. We wore his black ass down. Now he's just shaking and all that, and he's like that old darkie in those movies and antebellum deals. Yeah, you know, he served us so faithfully, and he's so happy now he can go on off. And we know that's not what Ali was, but that's the perception that they'll use to cast him in a negative light. As I say this, Fred Whitted, the professor, is in the mix. Good afternoon, Professor.
Good afternoon. I see y'all up to y'all games again, so leave them people alone. Some people you got to let wallow in their own stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing you can say against them is going to hurt them, and nothing you can say for them, they don't deserve you saying nothing for them. So mm-hmm. sometimes you just got to let the idiots be idiots.
Fred, I got to ask this question about Fred. The Boston Football Club did what they did last week with the Twitter they blew up in their face. Now they didn't know after all this week of events, and with the Sterling Gate in L.A., do you think they would get a clue what's going on?
Oh, which ball club?
The Washington Football Club.
The Washington Football Club. Well, remember
they started a Twitter campaign. They started the Twitter campaign, Fred,
remember,
they wanted people to show their little pride thing for their team, and it blew up because they were saying it's a racist name. Get rid of it.
No, let's get some history here. Remember, this was the last team that had black players.
That's right.
They had to be forced to take the black players.
Yes,
that's right.
So, why are we surprised now when a change of ownership?
Thank you.
Still the same town, same mentality, to include a lot of black folks who don't understand that they're being called the team is being called the red niggers.
That's right.
So, why are we surprised? This is old news. This is the same old song, just in the same meaning. They don't care that you are insulting somebody because it's just the red niggas being insulted now instead of the black niggas.
That's
right. So who cares?
Mm-hmm.
And this is how he feels on one hand. Now,
and a
let's
white
take
nigga
a step
owns the
further.
Team. That means it's
he's a Jew.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But let's not digress on this. Let's keep moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
This man is pumping for a mass sell off of old stuff with the term hands on it, and whatever the name becomes, which can, you know, and there's, I mean, I've seen several possibilities, the Warriors or whatever, that are more positive, quote unquote. At the same time, though, what's he doing? He's pumping the price up. If they make him sell, we can change the name. He's going to get the two being like this Sterling butthole.
Thank you. That's where I was going. Go ahead, brother.
So because of that, I'm not the least bit surprised. I'm surprised he's not being more vocal. He's pacing himself to get the price up to where he can sell the team so the name can be changed. Because he's taking that stance that Al Flynn is no niggas in baseball under my watch.
That's right.
Now, you know, I'm not above. I'm not going to pray for him to die like Al Flynn did. But, hey, if he gets removed, he gets
removed. That's right. That's exactly right. No, it's true. That's exactly the approach. And that's the scary part about it all, because folks really don't see the thing drop down like it is. We briefly spoke on this last show. And some of you younger folks may not know who Nat King Cole is, and if you don't, go ask your mama, because she'll tell you.
You might have got here on Nat King Cole being a merry old soul.
Nat King Cole was an entertainer and singer and actor who, in the 50s, had his own TV show. It was only 15 minutes. It gave him enough time to smoke 3 or 4 cigarettes and sing a couple songs, and he couldn't get sponsorship because he was black. And he wasn't just black in terms of the black and white cameras. He was Michael Vick black, very dark-skinned brother. And a documentary came out about how Nat King Cole had to face all kinds of drama when he was living out in Los Angeles, and he moved to a white area. I believe the area is called Hunting Park or something like that. But you get the point. He moves in, and the so-called liberal residents out there want to force him out to a point that they even said that we'll buy your house, and they were going to pay him a ridiculous amount of money to do so because they wanted the area to remain white. So it wasn't so much pumping up the price as it was get the fuck out of here money. Now, I relate this to the issue with Donald Sterling. And we have to connect all the financial dots on this. So, Fred and Gary, I want y'all on point on all of this, because this started 40 years ago with the Buffalo Braves, the basketball team which left Buffalo to go to San Diego. And they left Buffalo under the same kind of financial duress in a way that they're undergoing now, that Pat Freeman has been so passionate about in fighting for the citizens of Western New York. So now they're in San Diego. Sterling buys the team for $12 million. So if you're scoring out there, so $12 million is his investment in this team. as the years go by and his racist behaviors are condoned. And let's say condoned just exactly what it is, because that's exactly what happened. David Stern protected this son of a bitch. And I will say this until I'm navy blue in the face, because nobody else is saying it. David Stern is either handling this from behind the scenes as an advisor to Silver, because whatever Silver says has to be endorsed by the owners. He has no voice whatsoever. He's saying exactly what the owners are telling him to say. So we move on with this. We know what happens as far as the incident. Shit hits fan. All that other stuff comes out. Now he's supposedly forced to sell the team. Well, if he didn't get forced to selling the team, if Mark Cuban hadn't come out to the extent that he came out and said, we're going to do this, or I'm confessing that I'm a redneck myself, Cuban ran interference for Sterling, because with the sale of the team, as a byproduct of it, they don't have to vote on getting Cuban out. And Gary, you yourself said, you know, that LeBron and maybe a couple others were going to start a movement that if they didn't get a unanimous vote of 30 zip to get his ass, or 29 zip to get his ass out of there, they were going to boycott. So Cuban has stealthily put himself in the mix in all of this, not just protecting Sterling, who he may or may not be friends with, but he's protected the other redneck owners in the league, and we ran off at least three of them who would potentially vote no unless either the vote's made public or there's no vote at all. So, Gary, first, you draw a skull that out, if you would.
Okay, Michael, the first thing about this is the NBA has a chance to improve its minority ownership of a team. It didn't do that.
No.
And the NBA sat there with a team that was up for sale and got a black or Latino to get to that. What did they do? Nothing. Right? That tells me right there they don't give a, you know what, about minority ownership.
No, that was all lip service. They weren't going to ever allow any minority to own.
I'm a bad player. My next demand is, if you don't get an African American owners in the league, we're walking. And my thing about all these players is that they become soft, they become mellow, they become quiet on real issues. This is a real issue here. But Mr. Joey said, they should have walked out of that game five.
Yes, they should have walked. We've said that, Gary. We know they should have walked. But here's where it gets tricky. Because in between all of this, the Milwaukee Bucks were purchased for, I think, $580 million. I may be wrong here by a dollar or so there. But, all right, so sit that $580 million out in limbo. Meanwhile, back in L.A., as all this other stuff is being unfolded and more shit's being put out about Sterling, he goes on public regular TV, gets his time. Mrs. Sterling goes out there. She gets her time. So the players and the moment that you just talked about, Gary, was missed, and we stayed on that. So now, Fred, as we're adding up the dollars, just like you said, the price was getting pumped up because, well, somebody who might have thought, all right, we're going to get a shot in here. You know, Oprah came in there, wanted to throw some money in the pot. But, of course, what I heard immediately, I don't know if you heard it in North Carolina, and Gary, I don't know if you heard it out in California, but what I heard down here in my neck of the woods was, what's Oprah doing buying a team? She don't need no team. You know? Obviously, it was like, you know, we ain't got no niggas coming in here buying no team. You know, we didn't know how that happened. And the Robert Johnson situation was more of an anomaly because they knew he was not going to roll. Michael Jordan was connected with that, and that only gave a stamp to supposedly legitimizing the idea of the Charlotte, I believe that the Hornets now again, getting purchased. But the long and short of this comes back to the money. I don't even think the Los Angeles Lakers were worth barely over $1 billion. You know, and they have got to be, either they, the Knicks, or the Boston Celtics have got to be among the most valuable franchises in the National Basketball Association. We all agree on that, yes? So now, all of a sudden, we have the price ratcheted up, and I'm sure the owner in Milwaukee's pissed, but not so pissed, because I guess he figures from a standpoint of a standard being set, his franchise value just jumped up, and he just barely signed the deal to own the team. So the $580 he spent, we could say in terms of net worth, may have even doubled off the sale of the Clippers. Because now a team that had blown up to a net worth of about $575 million prior to all of the shit hitting the fan regarding the tape and everything else that came out in Deadspin and what have you, now is worth $2 million. The culprits have gotten away. Because there were $2 billion, excuse me. The culprits have got away. And Mark Cuban acted very much like the Robert Redford character in the movie The Sting. And David Stern, maybe behind it all, was the Paul Newman character, Gandalf, who watched the whole thing, worked the whole thing. And the next thing you know, $2 billion to get the fuck out. Now, that's what it'll be perceived as, like, you know, we're doing this great deal for humanity. And Ballmer, the Microsoft, former Microsoft owner, he's going to get looked at as a good guy because they're thinking, well, anybody's got to be better than that other redneck who just got kicked out. But is that really true? All we know now is that basketball franchises are going to be worth billions when the Dallas Cowboys were barely worth $2 billion, where $2 billion. And Washington's football club and the Eagles and the Giants and all those other clubs are sitting there licking their chops because Mark Cuban not only did the NBA a favor, he did some of those NFL owners a favor as well. Am I making sense, Fred?
A lot of sense, and you know, and we know we got when Mr. Jones still in the mix, who talked with Southern Draw, but then we also got owners of places like Atlanta, Tennessee. You know, and see, the owners may or may not be from those areas. So don't get me wrong, but the mentality that you're dealing with, it's all the same. And because of that, you're going to end up with people like that coming into play, and people like that who we've been dealing with, and we'll continue to have to deal with them. And the, you know, as far as the money goes, I don't know. It's amazing to me that this guy who used to be the whatever of Microsoft, Apple, whoever it was, just throws a figure out on the table like, you know, he must have got paid real good. He's going to plop down $2 billion on an off-the-cuff number. And you got franchising selling for what? 75%
there isn't. Exactly. There isn't unless the Lakers went up in price, because I always try to keep track of the numbers when the Forbes pieces come out. I don't think any NBA team had made or eclipsed the billion-dollar mark in terms of net worth. And we know the Clippers, who have been basically a shitty franchise, they didn't start making the playoffs until at least the last couple of years here, and they had one small break in between and maybe in the 80s when Tommy Chambers and those guys were playing out there. But this is not a franchise that's had any kind of successful pedigree. They've benefited from being located where they are in Los Angeles. The Milwaukee Bucks have more championships than the Los Angeles Clippers do, if we really have to go there.
When you got none, when your gross championships is none, what you got to work with? And you got zero.
You're
right there with the Charlotte Hornets.
What they did, and you're right about Sting. they embraced it out of market. What they did, that's exactly what they did. They embraced it out of market. They didn't want black ownership. And until people see that, we're playing games here.
There's something else that got thrown into the pot on this, Gary. At one point, I thought the high bid had gone to $1.6 billion. And then all of a sudden, shit jumped up to $2 billion and somebody said sold. Now, I know as former CEO of Microsoft, you might have a couple bucks. But something funky to me went down in between the $1.6 and the $2 billion. Because I don't think, and unless I have all the information, I'm not going to fully speculate, but I got the impression that some of that money had to come from NBA teams chipping in, because I guess after 1.6, Oprah's group might have jumped it to 1.8, and then when they hit it to 2 bill, the other group said, I'm out. So we know no matter what the intent was for Oprah's group to buy, they were going to get shut out. They would have been willing to pay any amount to ensure, Gary, that there wasn't going to be minority ownership of any sort at any level in Los Angeles.
This is probably our fault too, right?
Mm-hmm.
African Americans have to be more powerful and say, okay, we want this. Look, you mean tell me that there's no black groups that can buy a team? I don't buy that.
It's not that they can't buy it. It's that they won't get the opportunity to buy. Remember, the group that was going to buy out the Sacramento Kings, I believe there were a couple of black potential owners in that group.
Yeah.
And the league pulled the rug out from under them. By forcing Sacramento to build that stadium. And Kevin Johnson has a role in this too. Unwillingly or not, he may be perceived because he was a pawn in all this. Remember, it was Kevin Johnson who was a former player rep and former NBA player and current mayor of Sacramento who said, we need the control of this. We need to quell it down. He was supposedly having some sort of strategy when he really didn't have a strategy at all. As I say this, I want to throw my colleague Pat Freeman into the mix, because this whole money train started 40 years ago back in Buffalo, and I want to hit on him to get him have him come in and give us an update on stuff. Oba, are you there?
Oba's here. How you doing? How's everybody?
I'm fine, brother.
Everything good?
Yeah, indeed.
Hey, what's up, Gary?
Excuse
Oba.
Me?
Everything good?
Everything's good.
Well, we're in a waiting game here. I think it's going to come soon, though.
Mm-hmm.
The decision has got to come soon. If you're going to keep a team in Western New York, I think it's become apparent to most people that you need a new stadium. You need to have that new stadium in place before the owner, so that whoever the owner is, they will be locked into Western New York. The rest of the owners will let them know that your bid has been approved, but Western New York is investing in a new facility, and you are committed to Western New York. We think that that new facility is going to be the one that has been proposed by Greater Buffalo Sports Entertainment Complex and HKS Incorporated. So we have faith in that. We feel we have the best plan that's been on the table for a number of years now. And but we're ready to go. I mean, I think everything we've done and are continuing to do reach out. We're going to be at Juneteenth next week, not promoting the project, but promoting what should be going along with it. Because so many times you have huge construction projects like this that people of color are left out of the mix because of two reasons. They don't have the construction apprenticeship training, which is required in labor union states. And we've got to get our people to stop smoking weed. We have a serious problem with our young people failing drug tests when they have job opportunities. So that's going to be part of the outreach, too. If you want these jobs, and obviously they're going, if they don't decide on us, if they want to keep the team, they're going to have to build a new team. So obviously there's going to be jobs. If you look at the Minnesota job site, Mike and Gary, I don't know everybody that's on the line, but
Fred's on the line too.
Fred, how you doing, Professor? The Minnesota job site has 7,500 people.
Wow.
So we got to make sure the number is 25% if it's in the city of Buffalo, that our people are prepared to qualify for these jobs. And unfortunately, we seem to not be prepared for these things. I went to the NAACP and the Urban League a couple of years ago, and the NAACP president basically hung the phone up on me and told me, I'll get back to you. I don't think your project's going anywhere. I said, I didn't ask you for an endorsement. What I asked you for was, if this does happen, make sure that your constituency qualifies for these jobs. Now, that meant if another competitor gets the project, it's going to happen. And the reason I told him it's going to happen, the commissioner told me in Dallas, if you want to get it in Buffalo, you're going to need a new stadium. That was 2011.
That's right.
So, you know, we need to be, I think we need to look in the mirror a lot of times of our own leadership, that some of these so-called leaders that look like us really don't represent our interests. And it's, sometimes I think it's because they've either stayed too long or they've gotten comfortable in these positions. But you don't want to you don't want to be in a situation that a job site, if it's the Outer Harbor and they award it to HKS, you should be breaking ground in 12 months. And that means that 25% of those positions would go to people of color or women, and you better make sure you've got that construction certification. Now, if you don't have that, what are they going to do? They're going to outsource the jobs. And the people that need them the most won't get them. So we're going to be out at Juneteenth. We've got some volunteers that have been tremendously helpful. As you know, we've had several call-ins to the governor, congressmen, senators.
Yes.
These same volunteers are going to help us educate our community on, hey, on the horizon, they're going to build a stadium that there's going to be more than 7,000 jobs.
Be ready.
We need to be ready for those positions.
That's
and,
right.
And hopefully we will be ready. We'll get that certification, and we'll get this moving forward.
Pat, before you go, because I had to ask this before, and yeah, we had a chance to have you tie to the binds with this. I know you were young when the Buffalo Braves left and became the Clippers.
Right.
Was the atmosphere there regarding keeping Buffalo there of a similar ilk than this? Although we know the NFL has become much bigger in scope with all of this, was there really any opposition when the Braves decided they had to pick up and go?
No, I think they went to the same forces that have fought against this project are a generation before, and I think Brother Professor Fred Whitty could probably attest to what I'm saying. These are the same generations that allowed an NBA franchise to leave Buffalo, because at the time that they left, they were averaging over 10,000 fans a game. They had a Hall of Fame coach. They had they had signed Moses Malone. They had Billy Knight, Bob McAdoo, an MVP, Randy Smith. How does a team like that end up leaving Buffalo, averaging 10,000 people, and I think the professor can attest to that. It was a dark spot, especially in the African community, because especially my age, I was around 12 years old at the mm-hmm. time, and it was a heartbreak, man. I used to catch the bus down to the odd, and we get those $4 nosebleed seats and try to sneak down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it was a heartbreak. I've never forgiven the forces at B. Maybe that's been my subconscious motivation on how hard I've worked almost 24/7 on trying to get the stadium deal done. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was the subconscious reason behind it. But I see the same forces at work that has slowed up this private investment project.
Have you seen the connection, or do you make the connection with the fact that with this purchase of the Clippers for $2 billion, you know the stakes are now going immensely high with NFL franchises, and all the owners are licking their chops because now their franchises have inexplicably gone up with this purchase of the Clippers, knowing that NFL franchises like the Dallas Cowboys, Washington's team, Philly's team, those franchises were already leaning near the $2 billion worth mark right off the bat.
Yeah, I agree. I think that local ownership is praying that Ralph Wilson put a favoritism clause in that estate, which I don't think he did.
Mm-hmm.
Open bids. There's no way a local billionaire of the group that we have here can outbid any of like the guy that bought the Clippers. There's
right.
nobody here to outbid them. Magic Johnson's
mm-hmm.
group, you're not going to outbid them. If it gets into that type of a bidding war, you must
mm-hmm.
have the stadium in place or you will lose that franchise.
Exactly. Exactly. Fred, throw something in the pot on this because we've been adding up money in all of this last bit of discourse and whatnot, and I just want your vibe on this.
Well, among the people that you're dealing with here is a whole lot of money.
Goo gobs, baby.
And it's any form you want to make out of it, it's already there. I mean, the money is astronomical because, you know, they got a whole lot of zeros between them commas in the first number. But
mm-hmm.
see, we got to think an even bigger picture because I don't think it gets down to, say, necessarily pricing out blacks and other minorities because
okay.
it's more developing that mentality that we're going to keep this among ourselves.
Exactly.
Which we don't have. And I
mm-hmm.
see that more than anything else. But when you look at the fact that in Western New York, they're willing to hold up a project or really want to forego the project, they say, in favor
mm-hmm.
of non-project, which is that old dump they had out in Orchard Park.
Yep.
And so I'm curious as to what is the real deal behind all this stuff because, as you like to say, follow the money. Because
mm-hmm.
when you look at it, some money is being changed somewhere, and it's a lot of money, but it's not money that, quote-unquote, common folks truly understand.
Yes.
I mean,
because
you got a lot of zeros hanging out there after that period. And when you get some kind of zeros in front of a period, you talk about something that's truly big. And
exactly.
Seeing these people want to reject the Ann Arbor project.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say, what is it? Five is what? Is what over 10% of 32.
Mm.
You got at least five waterfront
right.
Waterfront stadiums.
That's right.
And this guy's going to make a negative statement about stadium being put there, and you're
work
about,
exactly.
Hey, we're just talking about football. We're not talking about, you know, baseball where there's several
mm-hmm.
more where they play just baseball.
Riverfront Stadium, Camden Yards, all of this is by the water. And Baltimore literally built up their whole inner harbor, because it's the outer harbor in Buffalo, but Baltimore literally built up their whole inner harbor and made the Orioles a profitable team. So in spite of their front office competence in hiring talent, until recently, Baltimore was still an ideal location ballpark-wise. They got an all-star game and other stuff, and they made money because they built that stadium. So everything that Pat said in this flows through. Here's where it gets tricky, though. And Gary, I want you to throw in on this because you're out there in a city that's going through the same kind of stuff that Buffalo is.
Yeah.
Now, we know with $2 billion, because Jerry Jones paid $1 billion to build that stadium. And we already know from concerts and all that shit, he's already made that billion and then some. And we know when the SEC season starts, their first game in this year where there's going to be a college playoff, where none of the kids are getting paid, they're going to hold that inaugural game down there in Jerry Jones's playpen. So we know Jerry's going to be making his money. Here's what bothers me. Okay, they've made $2 billion off the sale of the Clippers, pending league approval, which we know will be jettisoned through.
Right.
How are you going to make up $2 billion that quickly? Now, see, we can see that in football. Y'all understand my meaning? I mean, it's easier to see in football because you know there's going to be thousands of people there. There's going to be mega concerts. There's going to be other events as well that Jerry's going to be using that stadium for. So that money is going to come back. If it was about purchasing the Dallas Cowboys for $2 billion, you know, it would be seen a lot easier because we could imagine it easier. I can't imagine that from a basketball team, no matter how prime the location, that $2 million is going to be made up even over a 5 to 10 year period. So,
Gary. My boy did 20 years ago. They didn't hear anybody. The New York Knicks, Chicago Bulls, LA Lakers will give.
But the NBA doesn't do revenue sharing, if I understand it right.
What, again?
I said the NBA does not do revenue sharing, if I understand it right. I don't think they have they don't have the same type of contractual arrangement that the NFL does.
Michael, what I was saying to you is, after this deal goes through, they will.
They're going to go that way. Okay, I feel you.
Because what they're trying to do is keep us right out. And this is the way to do it. If you get revenue sharing, you can't buy a team.
Yeah.
You can't buy a team. And this is the way to do it.
That makes sense.
The New York Knicks.
That makes sense.
The Chicago Bulls. The Lakers. The San Antonio Spurs. They will all give money to LA. As well.
Well, that's an interesting premise because, Fred, you being down there in an area where college basketball is extremely profitable, courtesy of your two schools down there, aside from the HBCU schools, and the fact that the pro team is starting to make baby steps, you also have a football team down there that has a brand new stadium. Now, I don't know when Carolina's ever going to get a Super Bowl, but I think you understand my point. How are they going to make up this $2 billion? Just off of basketball. If Gary says revenue stream is going to come but doesn't come, that's one thing. But what do you think is going to be the way that this gap will be covered by this $2 billion basketball deal?
One, raise price on tickets. Two, raise price
that's
on advertising.
That's obvious.
And then you got to do whatever it takes to get crowds in the house. Increase for the tickets to pay off, as well as for the increased advertising to pay off. But, you know, the kind of stuff you're dealing with here, they don't have revenue sharing over the table, but there's evidence that there's revenue sharing under the table.
Right.
Or around the corner of the table, because, you know, how are you going to guarantee some kid who's played in the league 2 years, you'll guarantee him, say, $50, $60, $70 million and still pay your mortgage. I mean, that adds up money before it's over. And, you know, we're talking about this, but, you know, my question is, it really relevant? Because when we look at the fact that these people that we're talking about, we don't know how many millions they got. We're talking Microsoft owner, or Microsoft executive. Who knows how much he's worth?
Yeah.
And remember, Oprah just got a billion. And she don't talk to the little boy that just sold the earphone things for 3.8, I think it was. She ain't going to talk
somebody
to him. But you know, looking at him, he's going to blow the first $800 million, so he's going to be just a $3 billionaire.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the money angle is good to look at on one hand, but overall it's not good to look at because, I mean, they're talking outside of our basic range.
And exactly.
When we look at what is the NBA going to do or whoever is going to do, I mean, every time provided the team is winning somewhat, or at least, you know, see, every time they play, you're going to have 10 to 12,000 people. So, in round numbers, you're going to have 40,000 people come to your place. What's that? 22 times, roughly? 21 times?
Right.
So you got 40, or you can even break 50 if you go with 10,000. And so that's 50,000 people in the stands 16 times.
Yep.
So when you start playing through the numbers there, as far as season tickets goes and selling tickets goes, you can make up that side of it, but that's not the real money.
Hang on, Fred, before you go further, because Gary's got to check in with the Cove. Gary, give us a final thought and a preview of the Cove at 4 o'clock, please. And I got Cowboy Red on the line as well.
We are winning one of the best Stanley Cup playoffs I've ever seen. Last night.
I agree.
Last night was a classic. It is a classic. Patrick Kane, who disappeared the first three games, finally showed up and scored two goals and beat the LA Kings last night. So, game seven tomorrow night. I don't care who wins. Either one is going to beat the New York Rangers. I don't care which team it is.
Indeed.
I will discuss the Native American Indians and the social, economic, and political ramifications of the Boston Football Club and why we should pay more attention. And lastly, Rhonda Harper will be on for the Sierra Leone surfing competition, and to be on the show too.
All right. So, good stuff coming ahead at 4 o'clock. The Great Lipper Cove, Gary Norris Gray, discussing the Surf Sierra Leone Project, the Washington Football Club, and ramifications of how the posse is closing in on them to change the damn game. Now, as I say this, I saw Cowboy Reggie pop in. Cowboy, you can come on back. Fred, continue, please, because we really can't ignore the money aspect of this because, you know, I always thought if somebody gave me $1 billion, I'd find a way to spend that shit if I had to. But, you know, when you see it all adding up, you know, given your formula, how long a time do you think goes by before that $2 million is made up? $2 billion, rather, excuse me.
$2 billion divided by what equals what, which gets you whatever it is that's left. Realistically, if they can afford to buy you would think if they were able to afford to buy the team, you still got to sustain a team. You know, you got to do
that right
now. Most teams, you got the private jet that's outfitted
mm-hmm.
for the team, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So mm-hmm. how do you maintain this team? How do you maintain the health of the team? How do you
mm-hmm.
pay your staff? And, you know, there's a lot more people in these offices than you have out there on the field, although they may get paid
exactly.
much
mm-hmm.
less. Well, I say that to say this. I'm sure that somewhere in the minds of somebody, they had a system that would, one, placate black folks, two, pacify them, three,
mm-hmm.
just tell them to shut the heck up
mm-hmm.
and go away, and four, give them his money back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a partially sarcastic way of looking at all this, but we understand the figures, and they're big figures. If you understand the figures, somewhere something has gone awry anyway, because why this man, you're basically paying him, say, $580 for the land and, you know, his team. That's the property being
mm-hmm.
exchanged.
Mm-hmm.
But then, okay, you got $580, so that leaves $1.42 billion left for them to go to whatever shenanigans they want to go through.
Right.
And at the end of the day, pay her and her husband off so that they can go away and be quiet and not litigate anymore.
Exactly.
So, you know, this is what you're dealing with. These numbers are too big for, quote, regular people.
Mm-hmm.
So regular people ain't going to be bothered with it. And I wrote something recently in and they said, why you put those blanks in there? Because if you put the numbers in there, you wouldn't believe it. That's how big some of these numbers are.
Mm-hmm.
And these people who are doing most of the belly aching, i.e. the mice and the rats, about the price to pay, a price shouldn't be paid, if they don't live in Southern California, they got nothing to say.
True. True. But what do you think is going on in the mind of the guy who just bought the Milwaukee Bucks? Because, again, in the midst of all of this, he bought the Bucks before the Sterling stuff hit the fan. And for him to pay about roughly $600 million for the Bucks, and he's sitting there watching this. I mean, is this something straight out of Trading Places where he's just looking at the price going up and whatnot, and he's watching the clock? And then, of course, when the sale is made, he's either got a big smile on his face, or a bigger smile, I should say, or he's pissed that things didn't go the way he should have wanted them to go because he didn't get a better price for his team. Is this an issue of him knowing that he had enough sense to buy in, or is this just him being greedy thinking, well, shit, y'all should have raised the price up to $3
billion? The latter sounds like it's the more appropriate answer.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who are smart in their own way, in their own field, but not necessarily, they don't necessarily cross borders well, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
And among the things you got to consider here is that those people who are out there trying to buy a team, you know, on the open market, you know, where their money come from?
Mm-hmm.
And see, do they have, as a lady on the Drysdale, Ms. Drysdale, you say, that's new money.
Yep.
You know, because remember, you know, just because when you pay $1 billion for a team, you still got to sustain that team.
Mm-hmm.
You got to suit and clothe them guys. You got to fly them at least, what, 8 times a year somewhere.
Yep, that's right.
You know, very few teams are close enough to bus anywhere. You know, the Jets and the Giants don't want to go to the same place.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else got to go. And they only do that once a year if they do it.
That's true.
So, you know, you got a lot hanging out there. So, to me, I think it was a bad move overall because you it goes beyond just pricing somebody out of the game, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, somebody got to collect, you know, what it should be now. How much is a soda now? $8 to $10. So now you got $12 to $15 for the same size
no
soda.
No shit. Mm-hmm.
You know.
And that's for a soda. And that's for something that probably costs about 50 or 60 cents in net worth to actually pour when you
right.
weigh that against the commensurate price of it at the stadium.
If you pay the person who pours, pay
mm-hmm.
for the thing, the cup they poured it in, pay for the ice, all the things that go along with it to make it quote unquote taste right. You ain't got 50 cents. You wouldn't have 50 cents if you had 50 cents doing it for
mm-hmm.
you.
Which brings up another
point. And with me, he probably missed it opening in the glass anyway. But that's leave that.
With that spastic girl. Oh, that kills a whole bunch of images for me. But you know, let's look at this from a basketball standpoint in terms of the Forbes listings. We already know the Forbes listings for football have all the NFL teams in the mix of the 50 most valuable sports franchises in the world. With this sale of the Clippers for $2 billion, you know, is this going to make it the first time a basketball team sneaks up on that list? And from a global standpoint, because we know basketball, in terms of at least globally, has more appeal than American-style football because it's cheaper. You know, basketball can be looked at the same way that many folks look at as soccer, because you don't need but so much to go play basketball. And with that, does that spur an increase in the value of not just the basketball franchises here, but around the world? Because we know there are major franchises in Europe who might have been looking on this as well. So other things that are way beyond just the scope of our little ball of dirt might be in the mix here.
Well, some of the stuff you got to look at here, Mike, is this team really worth $2 billion?
Exactly.
Now, push the scumbag factor back out of the way, and
mm-hmm.
just look at it as a team.
Yep.
How much? I mean, how long did it take you to generate $580 million?
Exactly.
$2 billion. How long does it
mm-hmm.
take you to generate the kind of money you're talking about? Advertising.
Yep.
Gear. You know,
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Yep.
You want to go shopping for all that overpriced crap that you get at the, you know, the $8 soda, all that. Will you take
mm-hmm.
that into consideration? How long does it take Mikey to get to? I mean, how much does it take to outfit Mikey so he can go out and play on the court?
Yep.
What's his staffing levels? So there's a lot more involved than just a $2 billion. And do they have that? Now that they pay for the stadium, who's going to pay for the team? You know, who's going to pay for the team to show up? And if I remember correctly, it'd be like one of the strike years when they don't show up.
Exactly. And the team has to win. And you know, that's the other thing, Fred. The team has to win. It's one thing if it's a successful franchise. Heinies are always in the seats and all that stuff. They ain't got to worry about season ticket drives or any of that stuff. This is a team that until recently was a chronic loser, in large part because of the owner, in large part because of the people he had in his front office, Elgin Baylor, possibly notwithstanding because of all of the stuff that he had to put up with. But when you weigh it all, the Clippers don't have no pedigree. They don't have championship banners hanging from their stadium. Like I said, at least we know the Milwaukee Bucks had at least one championship banner. So they were able to generate a fan base based on pride and the fact that when push came to shove, they did win. The Clippers haven't won anything but a chance to share a space with a team that has won a whole shitload of championships.
Which makes him look worse. I'm trying to figure out how. Have you ever seen this caricature that you if you go to, I know we got it hanging, there's a somebody at the tax office has this caricature. It's like there's two houses. One house is how the tax man sees your house, and then it's how you see your own house.
Right.
Now, some fool has come out of the woodwork with $2 billion and plopped it down and said, this team looks like this big old house.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess only the mouse are the ones that say, yeah. That's because everybody else is looking at this same house. They're like, no, this house really like this shack over here. It may not be standing up when sundown rolls around. Mm-hmm. And remember now, you got the Clippers team. You have Chris Paul. You got the big guy who went to Oklahoma. And
Blake
who else?
Griffin. Mm-hmm.
And after them two, who they got?
Exactly.
Because I don't know. And I'm not ignorant. I just don't know who they got as worth.
No, exactly.
You know. And so now you're going to have to go out and invest in probably Larry Bird. So you have a white person.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, Dr. J. So you have somebody you know who the heck they, you know, when you call rosters, call the starting lineup, you know, who, at least you know who's on the court.
Mm-hmm.
You get Griffin out there. You get Paul out there. They're still there.
Yep.
And who else?
And you keep the coach.
Oops.
And Doc Rivers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he can't play.
Exactly. You're not going to keep a franchise interested. The people who are going to be paying huge amounts of money in season tickets because you got a coach there. If your team ain't winning. It's like, yeah, well, thanks very much, but no thanks. So, again,
by the way,
justifying $2 billion.
I say, and just by the way, I don't come to see the coach. I come to see what the coach have them do.
Exactly.
And what the coach has them do is not winning. It would be like, well, this, this the, what does NFL stand for? Not for long.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so, but, you know, I mean, this whole shenanigans is just out of whack. It flies in the face of reason, all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's just utter stupidity. And remember, these are the rich guys who are acting stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we surprised when young African-Americans or even some young white boys act a fool, and they ain't got no money. These guys are reminiscent of me to somebody like Justin Bieber's with his antics. Ain't no way nobody of reason should have plopped down. I mean, if the bid was 680, was 580, you shouldn't have gone more than, say, 630.
Yes.
And, you know, if you bid up one thing, if you're bidding up in smaller increments, you get a chance for somebody to say no, somebody to get punked or whatever. At the end of the day, $2 billion don't even make no kind of sense.
Mm-hmm. That's what
scares me. For a highly suspect franchise.
Exactly. If somebody were to say, as much as I despise the Dallas Cowboys, that Jerry was stupid enough to sell him and somebody bought him for $3 billion, I could see them turning the profit on that because it is a successful franchise. But for a team that
because
has morons, one thing...
The morons will come see the Dallas Cowboys just because they're playing.
Exactly.
They sell out season tickets no matter...
Mm-hmm.
You know, and knowing they buy season tickets, knowing Romo's coming back and can't identify his players from the other team.
but you see, that's a result of successful marketing. They've spent years on that formula. They've got championships, love them or hate them, to back it up. So you have generations of fans raising other fans thinking that they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. That I understand. I understand pedigree. The Clippers are how old? I mean, let's look at this. They moved from Buffalo in the early 70s. So they had 40 years roughly to get it right. And not once has anybody been able to raise a banner to say Los Angeles Clippers world champions. They won a conference championship or two here and there, but they haven't won anything.
Mike, forget all that. Mm-hmm. Name a player that came from Buffalo. Who's the first player who didn't come from Buffalo that was a star with the Clippers?
That's a good
point.
I
rest my case.
Mm-hmm.
Don't nobody know who the heck they are because most people don't care.
Mm-hmm.
They have done such a bad job. You know, they're like the little storefront preacher who said, I want a nice small church here. And no matter how many people come down the pipe, we're not going. We're just going to stay right here. And we have me and my wife and her cousin and a couple other people up in here. And we're going to praise the Lord. Well, that's about how they did it. They got by. I guess we're using for a tax write-off for all the money he was making in litigation and his slumlord.
Mm-hmm. No joke.
Remember, you know, when you having to pay some of these cats, I mean, you know, all you know, what's minimum wage in the NBA now, and nobody really makes it. But you know, whatever minimum wage is, $300,000, $400,000, whatever it is, you got to pay these guys. And granted, it's only 15 guys you got to pay, as far as you know, team members go. So, what do you get? You know. What makes his team worth that? The insanity is just baffling.
It's really baffling. You know, I want to change gears briefly because I saw this, and I didn't know if this was something that went on down your neck of the woods as well, but apparently, and this is in the same spirit in which Rhonda Harper spoke about the Inkwell being this little patch of beach that they allowed the black folks to swim and surf and do whatever on. Apparently, in South Carolina, there's a section past Myrtle Beach called Atlantic Beach. And each year, there's a reunion of sorts with black motorcycle riders. Black bikers come down there, and apparently they come down there for their little stint after the white bikers, you know, ride off into the sunset. Nikki Haley, the harebrained governor of South Carolina, has come out and implied in so many words that we need to stifle the black bikers from coming to South Carolina to Myrtle Beach area and having their little celebration because, well, you know, they get drunk and all kinds of shit goes on and apparently people got murdered there last year. But yet, when Clemson has their home games, apparently there have been numerous incidents that have been hushed up because it is football, including an 11-year-old girl being sexually set upon. Now, I've never been to a Clemson game. I don't think I'm ever going to be going to a Clemson game anytime soon. But I'm just curious, Fred, about how much this gets suppressed, but yet someone like Nikki Haley in her position as governor would try to use her forum to perpetuate the thing that, of course, you know, too many black men in one place is not a good thing, whether they got bikes on or not.
Again, it's an old story. This is like Freetnik.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want Freetnik. In her defense, let me set this up.
Okay.
Proper. I take issue with Freetnik because you have that element that goes with any group. And the larger the group, the larger the size this element is.
Mm-hmm.
That don't know how to act no matter where they go.
Yep.
It's like cues who want to jump up and stomp just because they hear music. Like people came to see them. In reality, because I forget, and it's on YouTube, and I don't know what school it was, but I know this one cue almost had to be pulled off the stage because after he gets his diploma, he decides he's going to stomp for a little bit.
Jesus.
And he's not moving across the stage, whereas the other young man comes up behind him, who just on his size alone, looked like he might have been a football or basketball player.
Okay.
My point is simply this. There's some people who don't know how to act no matter where you go.
Mm-hmm.
But now, that reasoning behind that goes with some people, and I'm saying some people,
mm-hmm.
because I'm not differentiating between blacks or whites. Some people don't know how to act no matter where they go. Because
yep.
I remember a few years ago at Myrtle Beach, there was this picture of this girl in this string bikini.
Okay.
Well, it was more string than bikini. And unfortunately, whoever wrote the story, and they blurred it, but you could still see the gist of what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, this was cute, but the black girl who gets arrested because the wind blows her skirt up,
mm-hmm.
it's not so cute. And, you know, it wasn't a string bikini, it was just regular underwear, but, you know, this is how certain things are looked at.
Yep.
You know, tomato, tomato. And we still get caught up in this nonsense. But even worse than that, I went to Atlantic Beach when I was in school, I want to say maybe the ninth grade.
Okay.
Atlantic Beach.
So you know of that area then?
Mm-hmm. Atlantic Beach was built in part by people in my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
It was a beach north of Myrtle Beach where people, where blacks were allowed to go. There are people who had condos down there or beach houses, all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I know several people who still own beach houses down there. Matter of fact,
okay.
I have a standing invitation from a couple of them, and I said, if I hear this hurricane coming, you can have my date. But, you know, it was where blacks made the attempt to at least build their own place. It was
mm-hmm.
It would never become what Myrtle Beach was because the white folks there bought in the white folks who had money to put in Grand
yeah.
Strand Amusement Park, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there's some nice houses down there. There's some nice places down there. But then some parts of it are really run down.
Mm-hmm.
But my thing with this is, what that is, if you go to Atlantic Beach, go to Atlantic Beach. Hang out with your people. You know they don't want you. Don't give them your money.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And don't put yourself in position. Because, you know, all kinds of stuff is happening at Atlantic Beach. There was a white police officer killed at Atlantic Beach back in, I want to say, the 30s or 40s, in
mm.
uniform,
mm-hmm.
on his Klan uniform. I mean, he was shot dead. And the powers that be couldn't do so much because, hey, he was there with a gun, and they started shooting, and the black folks shot back. Became
mm-hmm.
a breakup. I mean, you know, so this, I mean, the history of Atlantic Beach is quite deep. I mean, there were several doctors from here in town.
Mm-hmm.
One of the people who put money in it was Dr. Eaton, who was the mentor. He actually housed Althea Gibson at his house.
Mm-hmm.
And she trained in his backyard.
Mm-hmm.
His son, Dr. Eaton's father is from Fayetteville, and Dr. Eaton was actually born here. A couple of doctors, including the former president of Fayetteville State, Dr.
Mm-hmm.
Seabrook, put money down there. A couple of doctors
yep.
far away as Winston-Salem and Charlotte put money, black doctors put money into the buying of the land and some of the original buildings. They built their own places down there, and a few of them still standing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this whole thing with this motorbike stuff, my ex used to go down there, and I was not a biker person. She could deal with that. I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, my thing is go to Atlantic Beach. They hushed the killings. They hushed the beat downs. Because, see, when the white guys go down there, they go down there, you have the Hell's Angels and all them kind of folks who show up down there.
Yeah.
They do what Hell's Angels do.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody getting beat up and somebody getting raped is unfortunate, but it goes with the territory.
You know,
again,
to your point,
that number of people together, some of them just don't know how to act.
Exactly. I want to read from the Daily Kos piece where this came from, where Governor Haley started talking this nonsense. It goes exactly to your point. At Black Bike Week, there is a similarity between what happens at Black Bike Week and that it's not tangibly different than anything that would happen at one of the state's major games on a given Saturday. Public drunkenness is the norm, so much that during the writer's time at Clemson, it was rumored that the school's athletic department had a gentleman's agreement with police to not bother underage drinkers or irresponsible adult drinkers unless they truly got out of hand. A stroll through one of the surrounding tailgate lots at Clemson will reveal open drug use, public nudity, public urination, a whole heap of lewd conduct, and even violence. I once saw a man get beat within an inch of his life in the middle of the street because he dared to touch the cooler of a passing driver. The passenger of that vehicle exited his SUV and bloodied the offender. There's recorded incidents of two men fighting over a tailgate spot during the lead up to Clemson, South Carolina, and they talk about how the two people were charged with leading a mob of folks and being charged with assault by mob. In 2007, a man sexually assaulted a girl younger than 11. Now, this is the part that bothers me. All right, there's a specific law on the books regarding a young girl younger than 11. So if she was 13 or 14, they wasn't going to say nothing? I mean, that seems far-fetched, but the point that somebody would have criminal sexual conduct with a minor is bad enough. But it's going into the law, and the laws that are set in this country, we know differ from state to state, but there's got to be something really wrong about all of that. And, of course, this is at a football game. This is not during Black Biker Week where, you know, they may be the shared debauchery and you may run into the same folks that you just mentioned. But how are you going to weigh one against the other? And how are you going to say, because we've seen this, well, we got to get rid of these black folks. They shouldn't be coming down here. I agree with you. Spend your money where your money is welcome. But I wouldn't give them a dime or dollar more than I absolutely had to if I'm in a similar situation.
Mike, basically South Carolina is a part of the country that North Carolina didn't want, nor did Georgia. So remember they're the one with the flag?
Mm-hmm.
They took it off the Capitol and put it in some kind of old area over to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but they keeping their flag in spite of the fact they know they lost. But they
mm-hmm.
want to keep their flag. Because it's Aunt Bubba and Aunt Bubette and whoever. Because, I mean, you see, this is the kind of demented characters you're dealing with. And unfortunately, all these characters are not part of the, what do you call it? All these characters are not part of the quote-unquote lower class. These
mm-hmm.
are people leading the state.
That's true. Yeah, I got Cowboy Reggie back in the mix here. And Cowboy, I don't know how much you heard, but we know Ratchet crosses all bloodlines here. And there's something going on in your neck of the woods that I just saw something for. And I'm like, how the hell are they getting this thing off the air? Or how are they getting it on the air? And why is it even on the air? So if you would give me some insight about the baby mamas of Richmond?
Yeah. Yeah, first of all, Dr. Witt, it's always a pleasure being on with you and Mike and the illustrious guests. And before we go with that, Doc, I'm going to have to throw a question at you about economics and how it works for money, but I'll deal with this baby mama thing first. But got to get Professor Witt's take on economics. But anytime as the Black Avenger, this Madison always said, that when America is culture conditioned, that white is superior and black is inferior. And then my foundation is that when it comes to our issue, we undervalue, underestimate, and marginalize. When I can get on a TV show and show the worst of our culture and organization and get paid mm-hmm. for it and glorified for it, that's why we see the craziness of the NBA housewives, as Doc and I have talked about before, the Atlanta housewife. You have yep. the lowest combination of a culture dealing with this crap. And the sad mm-hmm. thing about it is you would never see a Jew get on TV and do anything he can to disparage his race or his culture. You wouldn't. Matter of fact, going back to Daniel Snyder, our local Washington paper did a story about him when he did some shady deals down in Florida with telemarketing. Mm-hmm. They had a picture mm-hmm. of him with horns on because he's of Jewish descent. He went out mm-hmm. and went in to sue that newspaper. So, again, the question is that why do we see this over and over again? And are we not surprised when the rappers come on with their pants hanging down, when women come out showing their thongs and everything? I mean, mm-hmm. when did the weed come into our culture to show us at our worst, being the jailhouse? And matter of fact, can I stop this nonsense? You do not walk around with your drawers showing in jail, because I have friends now who work in jail, and that's not permitted. They don't even have clothing on that you show your underwear. So I wish that mm-hmm. you feel that just right there.
You want my comment?
Yes, sir. I got a follow-up. Go for it, Doc.
Well, stated before, there's a segment of anytime you get a group of people together, there's a segment of that group who don't know how to act, nowhere, no how.
Mm-hmm.
So this allows those people who show up, this is an obnoxious person who goes tend at the end zone of at a game and taunt players, and which you're told, you know that little stupid thing they say at the beginning of the game. We've all heard mm-hmm. it. You know, the NCAA and all this university and this conference
mm-hmm.
and all that. Got it. Okay, all that. But yet still this team asshole gets to stand up and berate mm-hmm. players from the other team, whether they're on offense or defense. He does this until the kid falls into the audience, and then he really berates him, and then the guy goes off on him, and
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden it's the kid that's bad. And see, the kind of stuff you got to get to is when you look at what we do to ourselves.
Thank you.
And that's what you're talking about.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
That's that segment who don't know how to act, know where you go. You know, that's the cousins you don't want to show up at family reunion.
And the uncle.
That's the drunk uncle. That's the cousin. That's the cousin who sits there and watch you like he eats like a chicken, watching you because he don't trust you, but he'll go with his buddy, his business associate, who's
mm-hmm.
a known snitch,
mm-hmm.
and then gets surprised when he's arrested.
Yep.
And see, people who have people who will do it to you. But again, it goes back to too many of us don't know our story. Too many of us don't tell a story. And we got to, like I was talking to a young lady earlier today. And as a matter of fact, I've had this conversation twice in the last 24 hours about positive images before our people. We got to put our own positive images out there. If we don't put our own positive images out there, they ain't coming from nowhere else but us. We're the ones who know who our positive images are.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to do that. And also, we got you got to call out those who put that junk out there, whether that's your own for putting it out there, or for your own for getting it out there. You know.
Yep.
And that's my basic comment behind it. As far as the economics of it, some money worth having.
Thank you.
So, Mike, my follow-up to Doc, if I may. Here's my problem, Doc. Now, go with the Donna Stern situation. Now, anybody going to sit here and tell me that this was a blind bid and nobody knew what was going on, I got to say, they must be a darn fool. I mean, anytime big money like that is involved, you have snitches who will make a phone call, well, you know, this is what we know, and they cannot sit here and tell me that the person who dropped $2 billion knew what was out there. Come on. I mean, people knew too much. But here's my thing, Doc. Now, if we look at simple economics, now, anybody do what they want to do with their money. But, you know, we sit back again with our Colts fan. We look at that. Magic Johnson, Oprah Winfrey, all their big-time money. This guy just looked at them and laughed at them and said, if you're going to run with the big dogs, you better run with me or stay on the porch. He dropped that $2 billion bid. I mean, what can Magic do? Just stand there and say, oh, well, you know, he ain't going to bankrupt me. You know, we're going to go ahead and get up out of here. How does that make any sense? Again, Doc, he said this is a hobby. I'm enjoying it. But many of us talking about we want to own our franchise, own our teams. I mean, when you got big money like that coming at you, how can you do it? Help me out, Doc.
Do what they do. I told you some years ago I did a job for this guy, this Jewish guy. And he's basically said, I don't understand, you know, he said, I don't understand black people because you all go out and take all the risk and, because you want to make all the money. Mm. And he was doing a job where matter of fact, we were in his car, and this was back in the 80s, so he's one of the old phones that were used back then that were basically a little more than, wasn't no cell phone. When I'm plug into the car thing. Well, mm-hmm. he calls and say, well, and I just use, you know, the deal is $100,000. I need $75,000. Mm-hmm. Somebody else is bringing the rest. So he goes get his check, and these guys are required to bring certified checks. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, how many people showed up? I know one had $5,000, or maybe two had $5,000, but the rest had lesser amounts, $2,500 here, $1,000, but it all added up to $25,000, which made it $100,000.
Yep.
And so as we were riding, I said, oh, well, why, you don't need them people, why you do that? He said, well, years ago, coming out of college, while I was in college, I was required to save money, work and save money. And this money was not to be spent on college, this money was to be spent after college. And he invested in something with his uncle. And say, like, some weeks later, his uncle brings him back a check for bringing his money back plus more money. Mm-hmm. He said, now, he said, eventually I became one of them. So eventually his amounts of money was coming back. Going in was more, and they invested in these various kinds of deals.
Wow.
You know, and it would be like a friend of mine invested in me putting some of my books together. Well, when I pay her, she'll get a lot more back than she put in. And it's done as an investment. And this is how they do stuff. And so eventually it adds up to real money. But we got to do things like this on a regular basis. It can't be a hit and miss kind of thing. Because you know, between the income plus the deductions, there's money out there to be made.
That's right.
How to play the game. And because of that, you know, they do their due diligence and make sure, I mean, every deal is not firm, and you got to be willing to take a loss because it is an investment. But at the same time, you know, we look at it, well, so-and-so going to go mess up the money. Well, usually the way the money is messed up is you take so long to make up your mind that the opportunity has passed.
Yeah.
So now, if you gave me your $2,500 and Mike gave me his $2,500 and the date of the effective date has passed, well, yeah, it's going to look like I messed up the money. The reality is you took too long to make up your mind or get your money in place, and we missed the deal. So now instead of being able to do something for $10,000, it's going to cost $12,000. And then you say, well, I want my money back because you said it was 10. Yes, it was 10 up to this date.
This is
basic economics. These are the things that they go by. And see, if you want to be biblical about it, these are the things, when they say this book of the law, you know, should not pass from your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
He ain't talking about the Ten Commandments. He talking about stuff like this. it's you read in Deuteronomy and Leviticus and all that kind of over that side. See, Jews know this because this is what they're taught when they're 2.5 to 3 to 5 years old. This is drilled in them.
Yeah.
Our kids, right. Run Spot Run, Dick and Gene, Puff, and whatever my little dog name was, you know, that's what we get taught.
Yes.
Jewish kids stand around and watch their fathers make deals while black fathers tell their kids to go stand over there and attend your business.
There you
should
go.
Be involved.
That's a great point.
You're right. You know, I mean, one of my mentors, we would go do stuff. You know, he would always tell me, when I was 30 plus years old, I stood there and I watched and I listened.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I make you do that because when I was a kid, my father would tell me to go stand over there while the white kids sit there with his daddy.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, this is how you take care of take advantage of Negroes, 101, 102, 105, 205, whatever, right on up the
mm-hmm.
ladder. He was being trained in this. I was told to stand over there where I got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And later on in life, until I learned, they took advantage of me. And so, you know, see, these are kinds of things that our kids are not getting because we don't bring them into the mix. And
mm-hmm.
If you're not told who you are, whose you are, and what you can be, hey, you be anything you want. And it doesn't have to be good. Within the last 2 or 3 months, she's beautiful, she's fine, all this kind of stuff, and she thinks
mm-hmm.
Underground Railroad actually has trains. Come on.
Yep.
what stump has she been under?
We gotta leave that one right there, y'all, as we get into final thoughts. I'm still shaking my head on that one. But having said that, we'll be stepping over to the Gray Leopard Cove in a few moments. Gary Norris Gray is already on the air. The Music Box Sunday, Gary Norris Gray will start off with his show from 7 to 9 Eastern, 4 to 6 on the West Coast, and then we will do our normal music therapy session Sunday evening at 9 p.m. Cowboy, as always, good having you throw something in the pot. We didn't even get into these ratchet sisters out here in Richmond, Virginia, which is still making me shake my head after I saw that piece. But throw something in the pot and give us a shameless plug, please.
Well, first of all, thank you for allowing me to come on. And, Doc, thank you so much for your wisdom because, again, the fix was supposed to be that one of the investors was gay and Oprah. They were supposed to combine their talent together. They had the best of both worlds. Now, as Doc said, biblical? Interesting. Strange bedfellows. But, hey, it is what it is. You know, but I just want to say again that Oprah and putting the magic, you have to kind of look in the mirror and say, wow, we thought we had it going on. But once again, reality has a way of slapping even them in the face. It's kind of interesting, to say the least. But anyway, Sports Talk every Saturday from 12. Shout out to, I think, with Jackson State, who I think they had a bus burnt down their baseball team, and I think they did well in the playoffs as far as the NCAA baseball tournament. I think it's Jackson State. I might be wrong with that, but anytime my HBCUs do a great job, we have to give love to them. As Doc said, tell our own story. So every Saturday at www.wcradio.com, Sports Talk. Thank you.
All right, Cowboy. Thank you. Professor, as always, timely stuff. Throw something in the pot, please. You can either give us a goo or a gob or goo gob, but throw something in the pot.
Well, let me lead with this. Today is the 31st birthday of my baby, Robert M. Whitted, who is in Blacksburg, Virginia. Happy birthday, Bobby. And the other big thing is we have passed the 135-page of Federal Profiled in Black, and we may actually release it about 2 weeks early if we can keep things going and get everybody's stuff in like they're supposed to be getting it in. But you can go online as of Monday and do we're doing pre-sale because we're not going to stock the book. It's going to be pre-sold except mm-hmm. for institutional, as in libraries, who because of contracts and all that other stuff, they can only buy after the fact. So anyway, if you want a copy of Fable Profile in Black or copies of any of the legacy edition of Black College Sports Encyclopedia in or the Black College Sports Encyclopedia, you can go to www.blackheritagereview.com and make a purchase. Also, American Role Model, Black College Alumni American Role Models, Book 1 and Book 2 are now available. All of these things support the HBCU Heritage Museum and Hall of Fame and the High School Hall of Fame for North and South Carolina. Go to www.blackheritagereview.com. Make a purchase and support a place or places to store and display our history.
Thank you, Professor. Again, that's www.blackheritagereview.com. As always, the Professor doing his part to make sure that we get to tell our own stories. Before I go off, my shameless plug, my first book, Imitation and Life, is available for purchase on Amazon.com and downloadable via Kindle. Our second book, The Heroes of Harmony Corners, is in its final edit, and it should be available sometime in the next week or so. Looking forward to putting it out there, especially if you guys like science fiction with a whole lot of science fact sprinkled in. Now, as I get to this, my final thought for today goes to Georgia. Now, my beautiful sister Gwenola Greer is there in Georgia along with her man Big D. And Big D and Gwen would probably have a good smack over this one because when I heard it, I wanted to smack myself. Apparently, in a small town in Georgia, the name I won't reveal, a woman is under fire because she plans to take legal action against them because they're telling her that she has to get a prescription in order to purchase a vibrator. Now, in case y'all didn't hear me, let me run that one back again. She needs a prescription to purchase a vibrator. Now, in breaking the story down, the young lady who has MS apparently can't get off without the assistance of science and technology. But this speaks of a bigger issue. It wasn't that long ago in Georgia that a young man named Gennaro Wilson, who had his whole future ahead of him, had his life ruined by the antediluvian laws regarding carnal issues. At a New Year's Eve party, he engaged in oral sex with a 15-year-old girl. And this time, Wilson was 17. It was even agreed by the parents of the young girl that the sex between the two of them was consensual. And here's where it gets funky. If Wilson had had coital sex with this young girl, they'd have said no harm, no foul, whether she got pregnant or not. But because he had non-coitive sex, they put this young man in jail for having received oral sex from the woman. Now, it got even testier because the prosecutor was this young black man who was trying to put notches on his belt. And this came out to be something that spiraled into this huge issue of, you know, sex and mistreatment of the prosecutorial office and everything that went into the mix and all of this. I went all day around there to say this. If it gets to a point where somebody has to legislate someone's personal home privacy issues, whether it's someone who wants to buy a vibrator or the difference between sexual consent between somebody who's 47 and someone who's 15 and someone who's 17 and 15, knowing that the parents knew and that the sex was consensual between the two, we have some big issues, bigger issues, much bigger than sex and vibrators. But just think about what was said. She needs a prescription. I can't think of any other state. Well, I'll take that back because I haven't been to some places in the South. But I would think most states are not going to have an issue about a woman going into anywhere or buying online a vibrator. This is crazy. And it speaks to a bigger issue because ultimately the pressure to conform is ratcheted up even further in other parts of this country. If the day comes when it's a vibrator now and a book later on, don't think that that's so far-fetched that it won't happen because it's been done before. We'll see you Sunday with our music therapy session for the professor, Fred Whitted, for Gary Norris Gray, for Cowboy Reggie, and for our friend and colleague Pat Freeman at WUFO, 1080 AM in Buffalo, New York. Have a great weekend, everyone. Kitchen for love.
BlackAthlete.com.
Now we got the spirit that can never give in, with a heart that pumps stronger than 10 average men. It's something within, I was born to win. You can't hold me down, I'm a black champion. We had to fight for equal rights, on and off the court, and at the turn of the century, dominated sports for the love of the game. Endured the pain and fought through segregation, had to make a change. Jackie Robinson, first black man to get a deal in the major league, knocking home runs out the field. Led the whole lead in RBIs and steals in his first year, MVP rookie of the year. Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, and Minnie Minosa paved the way for Reggie Jackson, Ken Griffey, and Sammy Sosa. Half of all MVPs in the history of baseball's been black athletes. That's why we excel in all our feats, cause we so deep, mentally, physically, and spiritually.
So all I wanna do is thank my God, we worked so hard, came so far, black athletes, superstars.
Light through the eyes of a black athlete.